Welcome to Needle Exchange, where we celebrate the radical, the joyful, and the unexpected in textile art. I'm your host, Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X-Stitch. And in this episode, I'm joined by Fuzzy Moore, an extraordinary artist known for creating vast, large-scale textile portraits and installations constructed entirely from reclaimed fabrics. We explore how Fuzzy's self-taught journey led him from painting to pushing the limits of quilting, why he loves working big, and how his Faces of Hamilton series helped him stitch a new community together after moving to Canada. If you enjoy hearing how artists take needlework beyond the hoop, then check out my conversation with Rosie James, whose large-scale installations capture everyday moments using machine embroidery. That's Needle Exchange's episodes 77 and 78. Stay with us, and don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, as there are plenty more textile adventures coming your way. We'll be back next week for the second part of the conversation with Fuzzy. But for now, enjoy the show. I'm always fascinated by people that make really big things and how you get there, how you end up there, you know, because sometimes I say to people sometimes, like, everyone starts out drawing an apple, and some people are painting the Sistine Chapel and other people make dinosaurs out of car parts or whatever. But I'm always fascinated when people go large, and respectfully, you've gone really large. And I'd like to know how that came to be, really.
It's really, as I'm making my work, I'm trying to get as accurate as possible, which means finding all those fine little details. So as I'm going larger with my scale, I'm able to like actually manipulate the material to like create those details to like that people will overlook. So I find my work almost easier to go bigger. When I try to make something smaller, just doesn't have the same touch to it for me.
And that, I guess, is because you're constrained by the physical laws of the materials you're using, right? It's not like you can pinch and zoom and make a picture bigger and smaller and just draw the detail in.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's all, you know, it's all fabric and whatever I can find. And then everything, I also like satin stitch everything, so to get like a thicker line in there, like it just needs to be larger.
What's the biggest piece that you've done so far?
I finished a piece earlier this spring for it was three children on swings.
Oh yeah.
And then so the piece contained three figures, but it covered 25 feet by 20 feet high. So I mean, each kid is like, you know, 18 by, you know, 8 or so. Like,
I feel like the first time I ever saw it, it was lying on the ground. And I remember Selena, who helps do my Instagram and stuff, we were talking about it and just being like, holy crap, that's amazing. And that was it, just lying on the ground, let alone then you suspended it from a wall because somehow you found a wall big enough or something.
Yeah, that's my only constraint, is finding a large enough wall.
That's amazing. Was there a certain point when, I don't know, did you do something that was like 6 foot? Was there a tipping point where suddenly you were like, oh, it's okay to just be massive? Because I feel like at a certain point there must be, you must have your own internal barriers about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the scale I generally stick with is around 8 feet, like for my faces or figures. Just seems like that's like a standard wall size that someone might have in their house. It's the size I have in my house to photograph on as well. But yeah. So when I was doing like the portrait stuff, everything's based on my photos and I project them and then kind of go from there. So I always, the first like real, like larger scale, like project I had, it was like 25 portraits or so. And they were all 2 by 3 feet, or you know, maybe a little larger, a little smaller, but I'd always project them really large to start, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of where I want the work to go. Mm-hmm. And after that I went to like full bodies, kind of came in that same scale, and then I've started to get bigger. I'm staying at the same scale, but just like zooming in just on like a face or like that. So like this big head behind me, it's like, this will be about 7.5 feet. and it'll be like basically from like here to here. So I'm starting to get in there so I can like manipulate pores and like individual hair in like a denim or whatever. So
do you feel like a god sometimes?
I don't believe in God, so I hope not.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Were those the faces of Hamilton then, the 25 portraits that you spoke of? Was that that project?
Yeah. That was the project. So, when I moved from the States to Canada. And prior to that, originally I was a self-taught painter, and then that kind of led into like this self-taught textiles. When I was painting, it was always like it was like a passionate hobby. I was still like working full time and, you know, just like I'd make a body of work about my life. And then, you know, once a year, have a show, maybe sell a piece, and then just kind of forget about it. Just making to make. But a lot of the work was more like personal in nature. Mm-hmm. So when I moved to Canada, I wasn't going to be able to like at least work for the first year because I didn't have like my residency yet. And it was going to allow me to be like a professional maker for the first time in my life. So I knew I was going to need subject matter because, you know, I can't just keep making about me and my wife and daughter. So I started a project called Face the Hamilton, where to get to know my new town, Hamilton, Ontario, I started with a stranger that I met on the street and just kind of like had a chat with them and then took their picture, did their portrait. And then in the couple of weeks when I finished it, I would meet back up with them to show them the final piece and say, who should I meet next in town? And it was just kind of this like running thread. When I would meet people, I would, you know, set up a interview with them for like an hour or so over like a beer or coffee, get to know my new city. And then, you know, it just kind of grew from there. I think I did about 25 in that series over a little under a year and a half. So it was kind of I called it like my portrait boot camp. It's kind of like working. I would find the photo that like would capture like kind of their essence or the vibes I got off the conversation, but also would try to have a new challenge within each portrait. So I'd kind of like find new details, like, you know, like this shadow behind the glass, you know, on someone's portrait, or like waving hands and, you know, just like little things that might not be noticed or weren't consistent in each portrait. So just trying to learn my craft that way.
It's quite a zen way of getting to know a town, is right. How much did you like learn about Hamilton in that time? Because it's very much like, I don't know whether the first person you pick, you struck it lucky, or, you know, because it could go in lots of different directions, right?
Yeah, the first person I met was another artist. I was at one of her openings and just kind of hit it off with her. So she sent me down a path of like other artists. I ended up doing like a city councilman. I got into like the punk scene from the 70s, like, which was like one of the earlier scenes worldwide. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, Hamilton. Just constantly. It was great. Everyone, because of the nature of the project, I would never kind of like get stuck, you know, meeting an asshole. It was just like, everyone was like nominating someone, you know, that was deserving, you know? So, it was just like sweethearts after sweethearts. It was a great project. Learned, all the good restaurants and what record stores to hit and like the bookshops and, you know, just
probably got to know probably quite a lot of people hearing about you as well. Because I guess it's one thing if you're doing like a painted portrait, but you're not, are you? You're doing something else that's got this like twist on it that must have been a talking point for every single person that you took a photo of.
Yeah. I think it seemed like people were starting to figure it out. And then as I was getting farther in the project, like people were meeting each other because they, you know, they were had this weird connection as well. So I was trying to build a little community within my new community.
Did you have a big like final show where you invited them all and they were like, hey?
Yeah. I had a big show in a local place here. Hung it salon style. So I had like all of them up to like this 20-foot ceiling, which again, like big walls. I love it.
You were like, I can do one picture. I can fill that with one picture. You just watch.
Yeah, really. And then like, I kind of had that idea of what I was doing. So like, as I had all the backgrounds, they were, you know, like different colors, and then I hung it, and it looked like one big piece. And so, like, you know, it became a big quilt in a way.
It's making me think, is it the Brady Bunch where they do something like that? I feel like I can see lots of pictures.
That's a little Brady Bunch feel to it, for sure.
And then you went and killed them all, in a manner of speaking. Is that right?
Yes. So I knew while I was doing that project that I was going to kind of, I don't know, I wanted to just cut them up. I had all these portraits. So I don't have that big of a space. So I knew I was going to have to get rid of the frames because they're all on like stretchers that were like they were like paintings. I just didn't have the storage space for them really. So I'd sold a bunch or a few and, you know, gave some away. And I had maybe like 12 to 15 of them left. So I cut them all up in concentric circles. And then I just had all these parts to I harvested them and then started building them again. So they became like layers of different portraits within one piece.
Yeah, it's a fascinating idea. I really like it because I think there's something about, it's almost like you pivot from going about the subject matter to then going about the form and just play off of that instead, like remixing them all.
Yeah, for sure. And that's something I really am conscious about in my work. I'm constantly looking for new forms. That square rectangle form is not for me, for sure.
Because you seem to, yeah, you've kind of released of that now, aren't you? When I think about all your most recent stuff, really, is just, these pieces are floating, aren't they? They're just free form in the backgrounds or whatever backgrounds happen to be in the room that you're putting them on.
Yeah. So that was the next body of work from The Face of Hamilton. I knew I wanted to break that square rectangle form. I didn't even really like it when I was painting. Something I'm always fighting against. So to get rid of that, I did full figure bodies of people. And then because when I was starting that project, I knew I didn't want to have like a bunch of people standing around. So I had to think about forms. And then that led to me doing portraits of people doing things that would bring them happiness. So it was like a gardener, skateboarder, or like someone doing yoga. So they weren't stagnant. They were more dynamic shapes and forms.
Yeah. And there's a definite, I think that's one of the things, yeah, you seek out character, don't you? You seek out ways of doing it. But what is lovely is there's just this deliberate playfulness and this deliberate joy in the pieces. I think intrinsically just, I don't know, just when you see them, they put a smile on your face. I think it's a real neat trick that. It's a good skill.
Yeah, that was certainly deliberate too. That body of work really stemmed from being in Canada and seeing what was going on in the States. I moved here just before Trump got in the first time. mm-hmm. And so I was feeling like kind of helpless. Couldn't really do anything about what was going on. And just wanting to, you know, I was feeling depressed, seeing the news stories, not even about politics, but just like the dying environment or, you know, whatever, like we all know what's going on now. I don't have to go down the rabbit hole.
The inevitable decline of civilization. Let's just paraphrase it.
Yeah. We'll just call it the dumpster fire. So if I have to work on a piece for, you know, a month to 2 or 3 months, I was going to want to like have it be happy and bring joy. So yeah, it was people doing things that bring them joy. So it kind of just naturally pushed that. But then I also like push a ton of color within my work that, I don't know, it brings happiness. I'm trying to anyway.
I think it's really important. It feels like there's this thing, I don't know, it brings up a lot, you know, you think about young people and you think about smartphones and you think about the digital stuff that they consume on the phones. It's not really the phones that are the problem. It's the digital crap that they consume. And then you think about algorithms that are naturally skewed towards promoting bad things because they are stickier and they get more traction and stuff. And it feels like digital digital naturally is inclining. It's algorithmically just getting worse and worse and worse. And so it feels like then analog has a duty to uphold the opposite. You know, we owe it to ourselves. If we're going to teach people, you know, I think about, I'm going off on one now, I think about AI and I think about like the fact that there's this band that went viral that don't exist because they're made out of AI and this and that and the other. And you think AI can take so many jobs. And then you think the actual physical art, and I think of myself as a curator, these, like, because we could be talking on a, we could be AI talking on a podcast now. That, even that doesn't count. That's at jeopardy. But it feels like physically seeing things that can be physically seen and arranging those is probably one of the last bastions. I don't think AI can do cross-stitch physically yet. I mean, it won't take long, probably. You know, we'll look back in 10 minutes and laugh and go, well, we were wrong about that. But you get my point, is I feel like if we're going to make things that show the world and we're going to encourage people to stare at them with their own eyes and not with their phones, you almost feel like to try and hold on to balance, we've got to focus on joy because the rest of the place is just naturally folding in on the doom side of things or something.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if I can even expand on that anymore. It's like, you nailed it.
Not that I've given it a ton of thought or anything like that, isn't it? But it's just such an odd one. I think it's just such, like, I feel it myself personally, is I used to listen to a podcast called The Rest is Politics, which is really great, but it would piss me off twice a week. And then I was like, I can choose not to do that. And I think it's hard because in certain realms, people, it's like boiling a frog. People don't even realize that they're being subsumed by negativity. They just don't notice it because it creeps up and stuff. And then you think we have to try and train people. It's almost like saying, hey, kids, let's just turn your notifications off, because you might find your brain hurts a bit less at the end of the day because you've been a bit more balanced. You know, you feel like we've got to be quite deliberate about this stuff. I don't know. You've got your parent of an older child, so you probably know far more about this stuff than I do.
My kid, it stays off their phone. Like, my daughter will leave the house with like 3% on her phone and be like, oh, I'm good for the week. Like, I don't know how I did it, but that I don't have to worry about. Yeah, no, it's a constant cycle of like having to step back from the doom cycle. But then like you also want to be informed and know what's going on. But yeah, it's
maybe by just talking to people. Do you find that the process of you making pieces in which people are experiencing joy is joyful in and of itself? Do you find yourself sitting in joy as a consequence?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think that's one of the main reasons why I do it. Like, definitely the studio is the happy place. I can spend 20 hours a day in there easily. And I did during COVID. I found out that my body's not strong enough to quilt all day.
Okay, right. I was going to say, where does it tax you? Which bits take it out on you when you're spending all day on the quilting?
Shoulders, really. Shoulders, neck, hips. I can't sit like a normal person. I'm always have like knees up and legs bent and like in a weird yoga position that like no one else can get into. But then that's the only position I can be in if I'm like sitting straight up. I'm in pain, so I'm kind of a bit floppy.
I have to have your sewing machine like perpendicular on a wall and you stitch upwards rather than across.
Yeah, for sure.
What kind of materials are you using in your pieces? Is it a broad range? Do you have certain favorites? Are you willing to stitch on denim if the person's wearing denim, all that sort of stuff?
Oh, yeah. Everything's for a game. Pretty much, I always say I estimate about like 95% of what I use are like reclaimed fabrics from thrift stores, like old dresses and shirts and, you know, sheets and whatever I can find. I'm also like a bartender. I have all of my like regulars bring in all their clothes to me. So like before I go through, before they go back to the thrift store.
Just check.
Yeah. It's my studio is there's, it's chaos all the time. I just live in like piles and piles of fabric all around me while I'm working.
I did an interview once with a guy called Ian Berry, who's a denim artist. I'm guessing you probably, I feel like anybody who's doing stuff with textiles the way you're doing it, like I could name check like Billy Keel and Luke Haynes, and I'm sure you're just like, yeah, no, same kind of ballpark.
Me and Ian were, we kind of like hooked up on Instagram, just like, you know, having chats back and forth. And I went out actually last fall to like just go and like visit and see him in person and hang out for a couple of days.
Oh, awesome.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. He's such a nice guy, but he's got like a wardrobe, hasn't he? Because he's just got all these shades of blue, and the only way he can do it is just have them all on the floor. Just kind
of. Yeah. I was staying at his place, and he's like, all right, I'm going to like have you sleep down here. And like, it was basically a room off of the studio. I'm like, I feel like totally at home. Yeah, he was like apologizing. He's like, oh, it's so messy. I'm like, you have no idea. Like, I have every color. So
part of a little support Reddit sub forum or something like Floordrobe Maximus.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, we have a different kinship in our thinking.
Yeah, do you organize your materials by color? Is there any of that? Or is it you just, I mean, is there organization in the chaos or is it just total chaos?
Yes and no. Yeah, before we leave, I can just like walk in the other room and just like show you the mess. But like, so I'm in this part of my studio where I sew, which, you know, there's some open shelves with like fabrics, but then the other room's normally where I piece and cut everything. And that's just, you know, tons of shelving, all kind of loosely by color. And then the floor is probably like 3 feet deep of just this fabric that I've used just in like the last piece or two. Like I have to like kind of turn it over like a compost pile every once in a while to find it. It's like, oh yeah, I remember this.
Just check to see where the granny's under there somewhere. Oh, found a cat.
Yeah. And I'm worried about getting in there.
So you trained in portraiture in the first place. Is that right? Is that how you started out?
No. Yeah, I've just kind of fell into it. When I was painting, a lot of my work was more abstracted and not, it'd be portraits, but not similar to the way I make now.
Right.
And then what happened is my studio at the time was like a cinder block garage, like detached garage. And we were living in Missouri at the time, like, and winters were pretty brutal. I went outside, all of my paints were frozen solid. So I needed to do something with my hands. And while I was in college, I used to kind of like hand stitch like some just like hooded sweatshirts or whatever, like just embroider something. I was always playing around with threads. So what I did, I made just a simple like three color portrait stencil style of James Brown, had on the back of a hoodie. And then I was wearing it around and people were like, oh, where'd you get that? You know, and started selling a few off my back, making them for friends, and then just developed that body of work alongside what I was painting. And then eventually I needed to go bigger, put it on a wall. And then from there, I just focused on textiles. So
all of the quilting and all of that stuff, you're just completely self-taught?
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Have you got any like family history? Do you got any quilty grannies? I mean, the American quilt tradition, is that a thing for you?
No. I mean, my mom was like craft lady. She was always like making things and, you know, super handy. I didn't come from like the quilting tradition at all. And I've actually never made like a like traditional quilt myself. Yeah, I know how to do what I do, and that's it. I wish I had better like construction skills to like sew my own clothes and things like that, even, but yeah, nothing.
You can sew them, but you can only sew them when they're 7 foot long and flat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because it's interesting. I wonder whether, I mean, have you ever felt the desire to like, you know, upskill or like go and take, do you feel like you've got your technique sorted? Do you still think there are shortcomings? And do you ever like wish you had been taught certain ways? I don't know.
I'm still pushing what I'm doing and finding new ways to manipulate and to push the craft and the idea of what a quilt is and can be. And, you know, so there's still room to grow, but I do feel like I've kind of hit my stride. So I don't know.
And weirdly, do you consider it quilting? Like, do you think you make art quilts or do you think you make textile art pieces?
I mean, it's all semantics. It's I'm an artist. I use fabric. quilt is like the shorthand, or art quilt is like the easy, you know, descriptor. Just can kind of figure, wrap their head around. But I don't, yeah, I just, this is my art.
So. I like it. I like it. I like it. It's worth it. I was just pushing just to see, really, because some people be like,
yeah. I didn't do the grad school thing, so I haven't had to have like the fine craft versus fine art debate over and over.
Can you do the fancy voice though? Do you have an art voice that you can use?
I don't think I have it. That's probably why I don't sell anything.
Yes. Need to just juxtapose the diaspora a little bit more and you'll probably be all right, right? So when you've got a piece that is 7 foot tall, like how do you manage it? Do you start in the middle and work out? Do you build from smaller pieces to bigger pieces and then eventually put them together? Do you lay it all down on the floor, pin it all up and try and wrangle it through a machine? I mean, I can't really fathom it.
Yeah, I always build onto, generally speaking, I'll build onto like a sheet and just start laying it that way. So I have roughly like, you know, a 7 foot, you know, piece of fabric. So I have some kind of structure underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the tabletop that I use is about 4 feet wide. So I'll have that exposed and just kind of like, you know, have the rest of that piece at my feet. Yeah, as far as building the structure, each piece is a little different. A lot of the time, if there's like glasses, that's like a hard structure on a face, right? So I can like start with that and then work and branch out from it. But I don't know, there's a different challenge with each piece and a different like plan of attack for me. Normally when I'm doing the drawing, I can kind of figure out, you know, the best way of approaching it.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was wondering, yeah.
Like applique, where I'm like building up layer by layer, but then I also utilize a lot of reverse applique, where I'm like taking, like all of this hair would be like one single piece that's all cut out, right? But then I'm like layering the fabric underneath it to expose the color. So for like finer details like that, so.
And has that become a sort of, like, yeah, because I remember I interviewed Harriet Riddell and she does machine embroidery portraits. So it's like she draws pictures of people, but it's kind of like drawing them without taking your pen off the page, because she's just got this running thread all the way through. And it's like the little jumps that she makes from like the head to the glasses, or from the mouth via a shadow down to the chin, because she can't take a pen off the page. It has to be a continuous line. And I wonder whether when you're planning out your pictures, you've got this like unconscious editing process going on as part of that, like, project management kind of thing.
It can, a lot of it, like I said, like when I'm doing the drawing, then I can see it better. It's essentially like a big puzzle, right? Like, so. But I'm working in reverse. I used to, like the last big series of paintings I was doing before I like really switched to textiles, I was hand cutting stencils, but they were like of forests. So I was that same approach where, mm-hmm. you have to kind of keep the structure of the piece and just exposing things. So, you know, cutting out trees, every like little hole that you'd see like through a leaf would be cut out. But you keep that piece intact. So it's kind of the same way of like that jumping of line. You know, you I don't know. It's just a way that I've kind of trained myself to be able to see, and my own like kind of language.
Yeah, I remember I met someone at a show in March, and she was doing, I think it was cross-stitch designs and stuff, but had previously worked in the world of pop-up books. And I was like, that's some clever stuff as well, because it's a bit akin to that, isn't it? There's a whole load of like clever engineering-y stuff you got to understand.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you got to keep things intact. Otherwise, yeah. It's not going to work.
Yeah. And then when you're looking at people's faces, just casually chatting, are you secretly drawing them in your head now? Has that become a thing? Just like looking at them going, no, I do that.
Yeah. Or I'm like pushing color that might not be there. Like I'm trying to look at it. Like I'm just like looking at you right now, and you know, there's like a reflection above your eye, but like I'm seeing that as like a green that I could have pushed in there rather than, you know, kind of a bluish, you know, like yellow tinge. So yeah, I don't know. World according to Fuzzy.
Yeah, no, I like it.